geothermal and so on, geothermal. Wind is a tough one. If you lived in Kansas and you can put up a 150-foot high tower with a 100-foot diameter blade on it, you can get lots of kilowatts of power. And the kilowatts of power you can get out of the wind, I think, are approximately a function of the diameter of the blade to the third power. So if I half the diameter of the blade, on average, I think I get 1/8 the amount of power. So in the metro areas where you and I live, Mel, very few of us have got the property and resources to put up a big enough wind generator to make it practical. That's my first impression. We almost always have enough roof area or yard area that we could put up solar voltaics and a solar water heater. But wind, I think, is very difficult. I know of very, very few wind generators on Priestfield's private property anywhere in the metro area. Maybe you know of one. Over to you, Mel.
Okay, funny you should ask. I guess I'll lead into this very simply by saying that I had somebody ring a bell here a few weeks ago, and he wants to sell a wind generating system for a private house like mine. And the system is made by Honeywell, not something that he's home brewing. He was a legitimate representative of a company that's called Windtronics. And at first I sort of gave him the eyebrow, and he says, may I talk to you for a few minutes? And he right away pulled out the brochure, so sort of whetted my appetite. I says, okay. I says, you got my attention. And it's called the Honeywell WT. WT6500 Honeywell wind turbine. It's about 5 foot in diameter, and it gives a whole bunch of specifications as to what you can expect from it. And I'm just wondering that possibility of these specifications really are possible from a situation that a tip-to-tip blade of 5 feet 7 inches. And enclosed blade system and acoustic noise emissions less than 35 dB, Dick. Go ahead.
Now, since it's called the WT6500, the implication is that it can generate 6,500 watts on a maximum wind day. One good piece of news is that the Dover Street, where you live, Brooklyn and Manhattan Beach, is relatively close to the water, so you get a lot more wind than the rest of us, a lot more hours of the year. So a wind generator would be more practical for you than it would be for me. And now, what percentage of the time is the wind going to blow at a velocity that a 5-foot-7-inch diameter tip-to-tip blade gives you a useful number of kilowatts? And one of the poignant questions that people quite often ask with photovoltaics and wind generators is, what is the ROI time, return on investment? The cost of the equipment, the cost of maintenance, the total cost of ownership versus what Con Ed will give you if you've got the right kind of meter and you pump power back to them. Let me drop. Many of these systems, like photovoltaic, and many of the systems, like wind generators, have a payback time with total cost of ownership of something like 15 years. And if you're a real green person, that might be acceptable. If you're a person who knows how to invest his money, getting return on investment in 15 years, compared to the stock market during normal years, might not sound so desirable. So I wonder, how many watts do you believe it can generate? How many miles an hour wind is required to do it? Did he happen to mention the number of years for return on investment? K2KEY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Yeah, I got the whole brochure here. It's called the Honeywell Gearless Wind Turbine. Patented called Blade Tip Power System, BTPS patented by Honeywell. It is a permanent magnet electric generator, UL certified, pole or roof mount, lowest cost kilowatt installed technology right now in its class. Its weight is 170 pounds. It cuts in at a speed of 2 miles per hour and shuts down at a speed of 42 miles an hour. It is a renewable electric generation of approximately around 3 kilowatts. And, well, it gives you, you know, 5-year warranty. Product life is average to most likely somewhere in the neighborhood of at least 20 years and all. Ah, but the price. Ah, there's where, let me let it drop. I'll get to the price sheet. And that's what we're up to now. Okay, K2KEY. the price. I'm trying to find it. Tell you about installation. Installation, if you have it professionally done, would be between $1,000 and $1,500. However, they are supposedly going to put it into some of these retail type of places, you know, home type do-it-yourself places. I'm looking, I guess it'll be featured maybe on somewhere in here. It tells you where, boy, what the price is. It's not cheap. And as you say, you got to really outweigh the costs and all. And I don't remember where I saw it, but I think it was somewhere around the cost of the unit by itself was $6,000. Plus, if you wanted it installed professionally, figure another $1,500. So, does it make sense? Oh, yeah, $6,495. Dick, over.
It says $7,500 on the internet, Bell. You got a bargain. WS2N.
How about that? So something in the vicinity of $6,500 or $7,000 for 3 kilowatts. Does he say, or is there a graph there, Mel, that shows what wind speed is required to get 3 kilowatts? Go ahead.
They have a website here to go to, I guess, to estimate what you can expect out of this. It's something to do with the mapping and everything and the average wind velocity or whatever in your area. 80% of the actual wind resources in North America are actually well below 10 miles per hour, 90% of the time. However, this turbine will run in anything over 2 miles per hour. At 2 miles per hour, it will therefore give you at least 50% of the power. So, well, it blows here. That I'll say much, Dick. We do get a lot of wind here, over.
If I took those numbers literally, Mel, where this is a 3 kilowatt capable wind generator, and you get 50% of the power output at 2 miles per hour, you're telling me 2 miles an hour is good for 1,500 watts. Wow. I'm a little skeptical of that. 2 miles an hour, 1,500 watts, 5-foot blade. Sounds an awful, too good to be true. On top of that, the power you get out of the wind, assuming you've got good impedance matching, in other words, you've got the right kind of a gear train or electronic adjustment, like a good alternator, a cyclo converter and so on. If the electronics are sophisticated enough, so you got the electronic equivalent of a good transmission gearbox. Under those conditions, the power output in watts versus wind speed in miles per hour, I think is square law. Might be a little bit beyond square law. So if, for instance, it is good from 2 to 42 miles per hour wind, let's see, it's happy at 25 miles an hour. If I go from 25 miles an hour to 12 miles an hour, in theory, if I was getting full power at 25, at 12 I would get one quarter power. So all the way down to 2 miles per hour and 50% of power, wow. There may be some weasel wording there. What do you think, Mel? K2RIW?
Yes, in fact, here it says, we have also seen power out at as low as 1 mile per hour of generating power. Don't tell you how much. Well, this is the point, Dick. You know, they according to them, he says this is a completely new application by Honeywell. We turned wind turbine systems inside out. We had to do just that by removing mechanics of gears and things like that in the center core. The Honeywell wind turbine patented blade tip power system is something completely new and has not been seen in this type of category of wind generation before. So, who knows? I'm just saying that, does it have any... Oh, yes, and it will be... Oh, here. Starting in the winter, I guess, coming up, the Ace Hardware dealers will have some of this goods to demonstrate. So something to look forward to. I'd like to see it, Dick. Over.
Question, Dick.
Go right ahead, John.
No, is that a propeller type or the barrel type, cylinder type?
Either. Like a bicycle wheel.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got about 10 blades, and it does the generating around the perimeter of the blades in a fairing. The little windings are in a fairing around the perimeter of the blades.
I understand. Blades are pitch sensitive. Are they adjustable automatically, or are they fixed pitch?
They appear to be fixed. I don't think they're pitch sensitive.
Okay. Thank you.
In that brochure you're looking at, Mel, you probably see a picture of it. Give us a quick description of what you see in that picture of the blade structure itself. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Sounds like Barry knows more about it than I do, because I don't see any picture of it at all in the brochure that I was handed. Barry, where are you looking at it? Over.
KT2QIQ, Dick, if you want an email of it, I can send you a link.
I have to move back a couple of pages to get to the spot. Come on, page. Okay, your renewable-energies.com.
Go to earthphonics.com.
Okay, Barry or Eric, either one. Barry first. If you see a picture of it, give us a description. Is it sort of a vertical cylinder, barrel-like thing with blades around the perimeter? Over to you, Barry.
No, it looks like a fan with about 10 blades. Let me count the blades. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. About 10 blades. They look like kind of like triangular wedges with a fixed pitch. They're not going to change. It has like a bicycle tire kind of thing, a fairing around the outer perimeter of it, and that covers the electronics, which is probably magnets and stuff, you know, so they can generate electricity. And there's a like a tail on it, you know, so that it always faces the wind in the back of it, you know, so you know what I'm talking about, like a weather vane thing, so that it always looks into the wind. But it kind of looks like an electric fan.
Would you call it a ducted fan? In other words, if I look at the compressor blades on a ducted fan jet engine, if I'm looking at the front end of a jet engine, is there some similarity in appearance? Over to you, Barry.
Very little, because the fairing is only, I don't have the measurements for you, but the fairing looks like it's only about, if this thing is like, I don't know how many wide it is, I'm not looking at that. Let's say it's 6 feet wide. The fairing would be about an inch and a half thick. It's not very thick. So it's a plastic fairing that goes around the edge. It almost looks like a tire, a thin tire, you know?
And maybe that's there to give extra support at the perimeter of the blades. Sounds like you're also looking at the picture, Eric. Eric, what would your description be? And are you at all skeptical of about it producing half power output at 2 miles an hour of wind? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, actually, I'm not skeptical at all, because I've done some stuff, not exactly like this. What they've done here, if you look at the picture head on, it's You could call it similar to the first set of blades that you'd see on a turbine, but essentially what it looks like they've done, just imagine the thing is a bicycle wheel and you have spokes. And on the ends of the spokes, they actually have the pitch capture area of the blade, not an entire blade. It looks like they have mounts that go along the spokes of a tire, and on these mounts, although it's probably all plastic injection molded, is the airfoil, and it's small tips of the wing, if you want to call it that. So it is, in fact, a turbine of that nature, and it looks to me like on the where the tire would be on a bicycle, that's where they have their magnets mounted, and then the housing has the coil. So that's how you have the generator. And because the way it looks in the picture, in the cutaway picture, I suspect that they have small permanent magnets around the radius, maybe about each magnet, maybe about being 10 degrees or 5 degrees spaced along the perimeter of the circle of the bicycle wheel, let's call it. Let me let it drop.
Yeah, Eric, the magnets are on the tips of the blades.
No, they're not on the tips of the blade. They're on the part that's covered in the housing, okay? And the housing itself has the pickup coils on it. The fact that it is organized like that would provide very low resistance as opposed to a big, heavy magnet and the traditional way that you make a generator. So there appears to be very little resistance. I started last year, I was using little fan motors and put them all together and used them in reverse with permanent magnets around them as opposed to electric field fans and did some experiments that way. So this is really a very interesting looking device, and I can really see it freewheeling at low speeds.
Okay, I was thinking that the movable parts have no electrical connections. That's where they would put the magnets, tips of the blades, and that the coils, you know, the armature, whatever you call those things, they're out in the ends in the fairing so that they don't have to move and they don't need any movable electrical contacts.
Probably use slip rings.
No, negative. Go to earthtronics.com and go to the Honeywell page. They actually give you a cutaway, and I think you'll see what I'm talking about. The magnets are mounted on the circumference of the ring. Okay, think of a bicycle tire. Where the tire would be, where the magnets are, the actual housing that would cover the tire, like the fender on a bicycle, or where the coils are mounted.
You've probably seen a brushless DC motor, and they come with the magnetic structures either on the inner race or on the outer race, and some of those are extremely efficient. And now this is a alternator generator type set instead of a motor, but I think it's using that kind of technology, probably neodymium magnets, somewhat like the ones that Wesley and John are experimenting with, and with those on the perimeter, on the tire, so to speak, they get swept past those coils that are in the stationary part, and that's where the power is being picked up from. And as such, as I see it, this is a purely electronic transmission, so to speak, so that no matter what rate at which the blades turn, there's an ideal amount of drag that those coils can create, which gives the most efficient way of transferring the wind power from the rotary blades into the electronics, and then the right kind of a switching regulator, cycloconverter, or whatever, converts it into whatever power you like. Is that approximately what you think is going on here, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RYW in the TechNet?
That's exactly what's going on here, Dick. And the interesting thing is, I have a bicycle which I have mounted magnets on because I was making an electric bicycle. And the bicycle, interestingly enough, I have the molybdenum magnets mounted on the outer rim of the bicycle and a series of coils that I pulse with power in sequence to put the energy into the wheel. This is exactly the opposite. Okay, they have the magnets where the tire would be, And it's a brushless DC motor for all practical purposes. And it produces, I suspect, a pulsating DC voltage.
Yeah, I followed the website you recommended. I see the thing right now. And interesting looking machine. And I see one mounted on the top of a house. A little hard to believe that it's 5 foot in diameter, but quite possibly. If you were buying one of these, and if money was no object, how big a diameter would you be willing to go to make sure you got enough kilowatts? Over to you, Eric.
Now, interestingly enough, one of the low-power FMs that we put together up in Massachusetts, the gentleman who's a ham, actually you may have seen his call sign on APRS, he actually has a full-size turbine on the top of his house, which, by the way, failed over the summer, and he's got to get a crane to take it down. But he has a combination of the one turbine on the top of the house and a whole bank of solar panels, which he collected from the various DOTs, broken pieces, and put them all together. And he essentially never buys power from the power company, although I'm sure once he got the bucket truck to pull the broken generator down to repair that, he'll go back to being that way. Interestingly enough, he also collects railroad batteries, which are huge things, and that's how he maintains his power when he's getting a wind and light.
From what you see in the world of broadcast, which gives you a lot of access to a lot of the public at once, Eric, do you see a slow or slightly building green movement among United States citizens? I mean, in Germany, because of the incentives that they have given for photovoltaic power over there, a high percentage of the population appears to be going green. I have the impression the United States is dragging their feet a little on this one. What do you think, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW?
Now, the biggest problem in this country is NIMBY. Not in my backyard. Yes, we're very slow about it. And there are some people who've taken the plunge, but, for example now, LIPA, which would actually help you, will no longer help you since they have, essentially, they put aside a certain amount of money for doing projects like this. And if you wanted to put solar photovoltaics on your house now, there's thanks, but, you know, we can't help you anymore because that pile of money that was there has been depleted. The federal government will still help you out a bit, but not in the way that LIPA was doing it, which made it really worthwhile. So that's the only one example. There actually are, in the East River, a couple of turbines that are making good use of Hell's Gate and generating some juice that way. The big projects that were proposed for the South Sea of Long Island got killed because nobody wants to see turbines.
Yeah, that's a LIPA project to put turbines 4 miles offshore on the south shore of Long Island, where, yes, with your binoculars you can see them. And for people to kill that project because of aesthetics, or to claim that the birds are going to be hitting it, I'm really unhappy about that one. As I see it now, there's not enough incentive, though. If the federal government would give you some incentive to be building renewable energy resources, and if your local power company would give you incentives and a partial rebate, that would be kind of nice. As it is right now, I think there's very little rebates from either source. On top of that, if your local zoning board finds out about it, or if your building department of your town or your village finds out about it, in theory, the assessed valuation of your house goes up because you've installed photovoltaics or a turbine, and as such, your taxes increase, which is really an anti-incentive. Somebody's got to do something about these anti-incentives. You might have an opinion on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW, in the TechNet. John with a question. Eric first, then we'll go over to John. Go ahead, Eric.
What you say is very true. There's a couple of counties in Pennsylvania that did just that. You put photovoltaics and wind turbine on it. They figure, oh, you're making money. Oh, we'll raise your taxes. We want some of it. Interestingly enough, at NYU, for a number of years, there were a couple of big turbines down the roof and around downtown area, no, actually a little bit off St. Mark's Place, but people complained about the noise. So somebody came up with a bright idea of something that I was doing, using very small fans and generating the power that way in small little bits. And that project went together, but it wasn't well constructed. It kind of blew apart. So there has been a number of really good projects done on a medium scale, not a large scale, and some on a small scale, some of which succeeded that are still actually operating. There's one building which has these, if you look very carefully at it, there's these little fans all along the edge. It doesn't generate a lot of power, but it generates power. In terms of green, I mean, architecturally in New York City, there's been a lot of really green buildings for the past 20 years. You look at the Citibank building, the heating and air conditioning costs of that particular building is actually way, way, way less than what you would expect for a building like that because of the top of the building and the way the solar arrangement was arranged shows that there would be thermal transfer of heat in the winter and thermal transfer of the internal heat to the outside in the summer. So there are and have been projects like that are invisible to people, and they've never noticed them, and they don't even realize that they're there. And that's been happening for a long time, but not on a very large scale. And it's only been through really creative architects that some of that has happened. Back to you, Dick.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, I have a question. If 25 miles an hour gives you 100%, and 2 miles an hour give you 50%, what do we do? Do we load shed, or do we have to install backup power? How does that work?
Well, first of all, I'm very skeptical that if you get full power at 25 miles an hour that you can get anything like half power at 2 miles an hour. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but without changing pitch and changing all kinds of things, wind speed versus power is a square law relationship. And that's reasonably well documented, at least square law, if not a little bit beyond. So full half power at 2 miles an hour, I think, is out of the question. However, when the blades are turning more slowly at the lower wind speed, and you've got the electronics adjusted for the optimum loading that gives you the best power output for that rate of wind and RPM, you're getting really a kind of trapezoidal-like sine wave out of your coils at the perimeter of all of these whirling magnets that are on the tire, so to speak. And now that power coming out of your coils goes into a switching regulator, and the switching regulator, once you've got it running correctly, can give you essentially any DC voltage or any AC frequency that you want in the output. It's just a matter of having the right kind of electronics. I think you're also asking, what do you do for standby power? I think you're asking, what do you do when the wind doesn't blow? Is that sort of the question, John? Go ahead.
So if we have a specific kW at 25 miles an hour, let's say it goes down to 10 miles an hour, either the inverter has to work some magic, or we got a load shed, wouldn't you think so?
There's a PDF that shows the output for wind speed.
For each number of miles an hour of wind speed, there's an ideal amount of loading. The loading is really the function of the way you put the switching regulator to those coils. I mean, when the turbine is turning full blast, let me drop. Let's assume that your turbine turns full speed RPM at 25 miles an hour. And let's assume that now you put the right amount of loading on those coils that are picking up the AC voltage from the magnet swishing by them. You put the right amount of loading so that you you take the... I'm going to put numbers on this just to give it as an example. Let's assume now that your blades turn at 200 RPM when they're completely free running in that wind, and you slow them down from 200 RPM down to 175 RPM, and you're getting maximum power output. Load them any more heavily than that, and they stop turning entirely. So you adjust the switching regulator to provide the right amount of electronic loading to those whirling magnets such that the 200 RPM blades go down to 175 miles an hour. 175 RPM. If at the lower wind speed, the blades, when freewheeling, would run at 100 RPM, and maybe the right calculation says that you slow them down to 90 RPM, you adjust the loading of the switching regulator so that it creates that amount of electronic load to the blades. So electronically, you're doing the equivalent of adjusting the transmission. If it was a real gear train,
hey, Dick,
you could go between low, medium, and high gear. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, all the wind turbines that I know of, and from what I'm looking at here, do the same thing. They have a smart regulator, which essentially, when they start up, they go and they measure load and they measure the actual speed. Okay, and the way this PDF table is laid out, I'll give you an example. Okay, in watts, okay, at 3.3 miles an hour, the thing will produce 14 watts of output using a smart regulator. At 5.5 miles an hour, it'll produce 40 watts. At 7.7, it'll produce 82 watts, and on and on and on. It doesn't produce full power until you hit 24.5 miles an hour. Oh, no, sorry, 54.39 miles an hour, and that gives you 4,700 watts with loading. So, you know, smart control, you can see the curve is rather poor from about zero to, minimum of 12 miles an hour before you get any real useful output from it. And in terms of, you know, what you do with a device like this, if you just have a device like this, you sell power back to the power company and you buy your power back from them cheaply at night.
So electronically, you have the equivalent of a 12-speed transmission, so to speak, John. To really do it with gears would be a lot of hardware. To do it electronically, if you've got the right kind of switching regulator, you can create electronically any amount of load that you consider desirable. Yes, you're going to get a different amount of power of watts output, and then in theory, you're going to pump it back to LUCO. In all cases, you've got to convert it to 60-cycle electronic power, but with the right kind of smart electronics, that's all doable. I suspect you're going to have a couple more questions on this one, John. Over to you, John. KQRIW in the TechNet.
Oh, no, that was about it. I was just worried about as the wind speed goes down, the capability of producing the KW is going down also. And if you have purchased the minimum you need not to be able to sell it back to LIPO or Con Edison, which Con Edison owns it by, by the way, I was just wondering how you could do that if you need 4,000 watts, and as the wind dies, it only produces 3,000 watts. If you don't have some type of supplemental power supply, you're going to have to reduce your load.
KQKY1.
Mel recognized, absolutely. If you've got a big enough battery storage in your basement, and if the wind blows fast enough during the day when everyone's away from home and not using power, you can make the total system per 24-hour day or per 7-day week, you can make it positive so that there's some power left over you sell back to Con Ed. But you're going to need some kind of auxiliary storage, as I see it, because there are times when you need power and the wind is not blowing. Go ahead, John, Mel, K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, as I said, the wind blows here. What I did after seeing this, you know, I got this idea. I have a number of these, you know, 4-inch muffin fans around, and I took one of the muffin fans outside on my patio deck here that's on the second floor off the master bedroom. We have a patio deck. You go out there, it's always usually blowing like heck, especially at night here right off the ocean. In fact, even in the hot part of the summer, we find that some nights we have to close the door to the patio, the sliding door back, because it's just blowing too much. So we get away with one thing here. We save a lot of air conditioning as the plus point, of course, for the summers here. Minus, it's a little cooler, I think, here in the wintertime. However, I took the muffin fan out there, and that muffin fan was spinning like heck when I went out there. It was on down at the ground level here in the front of the house. You could feel the wind, you know, blowing off the ocean. But when I went up on that deck, that wind was blowing. And I went and grabbed my meter, my digital meter, and I saw the muffin fan was putting out power. So I was wondering, how about if you would do this with a bunch of these instead of one big one, a bunch of smaller ones, over.
Well, that was what I told you about a little earlier. Now, Eric, you said that people were complaining about the big blade making noise. I'm a little bit amazed by that. What is the noise of a big blade? And when you try to make the same amount of watts or area out of small blades, boy, it's going to take a zillion of them. And by the time you put up those zillion, they're also making noise. So what kind of noise were they complaining about, Eric? Go ahead.
Okay, well, the big blade job was producing something like 70 dB of sound 100 feet away. So they were complaining about the whooping noise that it was making. This particular turbine, they claim, looking at the specifications here, that at high speeds it produces about 39 dB of noise, of sound pressure noise. So that's kind of noisy, but not that noisy. The experiment which my friends did at NYU, they took the equivalent of like 300 muffin fans and put them in a baffle, and nobody could hear the fans.
Well, it reminds me a little bit of the Sweet 16 speaker. Back in Mel, in my day, in the late 60s, somebody in Popular Electronics magazine decided that to buy a great big woofer to get the low notes would be kind of expensive, and that if he has the right kind of a baffle and he mounts a zillion, if he mounts literally 16 small diameter speakers and makes sure that they're all operating in phase, you get the equivalent of a woofer and a tweeter all at once. Do you remember that thing in Popular Electronics? And I bet you probably built one, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Oh, I sure do. Did I get excited over that, that I'm going to hear real low bass, you know. I collected a whole bunch of I had a baffle with all different kinds of speakers, oval, round one, big one, small one. You know, they were all within the type that you'd find in radios, Dick, and made a box out of it from a crate. And, you know, it sounded goddamn good, considering that some of the speakers I had to paste, do some cement on to repair, but that was an interesting concept. So go ahead. So what happened, Eric, with all these muffin fans? I was waiting to hear what was the result, over.
Well, we did a couple of experiments. Since the whole box had to rotate to capture the wind, they actually had a servo. What they had was a wind vane and a Selsun servo, which ran another big motor, which moved the whole thing. It wasn't put together that well, and it eventually kind of fell apart. You know, it was a student experiment of all things, and it actually worked out pretty well for what it was. There are in the city a couple of buildings where they have these small, they look like little, you know, those fans that you cool yourself with, slightly larger versions that are mounted on the building. They don't actually move, but they're mounted on all the four surfaces of the building, and the wind's always blowing up there, so they're always turning around. Now, another guy did an experiment like that, but what he did was he took a DSP, he actually took a microphone to the sounds that it made, and in the housing, he put a speaker that played the inverted noise and used that for noise reduction. That was a pretty cool experiment, too, and that worked out pretty well.
Could he do sound cancellation in multiple directions at once, or did he favor a particular direction with the sound cancellation? And what's your guess as to how many dB of cancellation was he achieving, Eric?
Well, this is a couple of years ago, and this was a bunch of fans that were mounted in a box that moved. The sound cancellation was directed one direction in the box because the sound noise that it makes as the wind cuts through the blades, as it passes through the blade, so the sound actually comes out the rear end, sort of like a jet engine. Front of the jet engine, you hear the intake noise, the woofing noise, but the real noise that the engine makes comes out the exhaust. It's the same sort of principle. The sound, the cancellation sound, was directed at the exit in the same direction as the exit of the airflow. And actually, in some of the later model jet engines, they do an acoustical kind of version of that.
Comment.
John, recognized. I got a quick question, though, for you, Eric, and that is, if I've got multiple muffin fans, and they're all turning somewhat independently, slightly different phase angles, slightly different rotational velocities, to try to cancel that complicated source of sound strikes me very difficult unless you're monitoring the electronics on each individual fan and adjusting the cancellation signal accordingly. Over to you, Eric.
You're forgetting one thing. The exhaust of all these fans goes through one port. The box is a long box, not an open box, so there was some wind resistance. But you get the summation and cancellation of all those sounds. That's the point that you place your microphone to pick up your reference from. So he was able to get between 60 and 70% of noise cancellation.
Okay. That sounds like 6, 7, 8 dB of cancellation. Worth fighting for, but if you were telling me he was getting 25 dB of cancellation, I was going to say, wow, how did he do that? You got it, John.
Dick, I have a friend of mine in Jersey who's doing experiments with radio tip fans. They make a lot less noise, and they don't have to have wind directivity. They'll rotate in any direction, no matter which way the wind comes from. So they don't have any noise of rotating, and they run very quiet. The radio tip fans seem to be the way I think it's going to go.
You're talking about vertical vanes, right?
Correct, like a vertical squirrel cage. It's a radio tip fan, it's called.
Yeah, interestingly enough, there's a physicist in Arizona who has one of these really strange-looking houses that is sort of built in, half built into the ground. He has a whole series of them. He also does vortex stuff, which is kind of weird, but his thing looks very strange, but it is very quiet.
KC2, QAQ.
Craig Quinn.
Yeah, odd thing about noise from fans and wind turbines and things like that is that a lot of times you can take a fan and just open load it and put it on a bench and listen to its sound level, and it's kind of deceiving. You might think it's very, very quiet. Now mount it inside a structure, like a box or an enclosure, and wow, does that thing make noise. Same thing similar, too, with wind turbines and how they're mounted on in their location. So a lot of these types of harmonic noises that come from these kinds of, generating blades that are generating noise, a lot of it has to do with the type of structure that it's mounted and enclosed on. So a lot of times there's usually one frequency that is usually most annoying, and a lot of times if that's dampened carefully, it can be controlled pretty well. Back over to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Yeah, let me try this one on you, Glenn. If I was designing an enclosure for the fan, I've got two or three different ways I could do the design. Number one, I could make the design such that I get maximum efficiency of wind speed versus watts output. But if I'm willing to back off a little bit on that, and if I'm willing to try to make the enclosure, the ducted fan, so to speak, with the right kind of dimensions and baffles and sound-absorbing circuits and whatever, if I did it such that I give minimum noise output, somewhat like what they do with some jet engines. There are some jet engines where they use noise abatement techniques, which I think are killing the noise by a significant number of dB. I suspect it's possible to get a relatively quiet fan system that only has a slight sacrifice in watts output. What do you think, Glenn? KC2QIQ, K2LIW, and TechNet?
Yeah, absolutely, Dick. And not only that, if you look at most of these new modern turbine designs, they are actually taking those approaches. Unfortunately, with the jet engine, you're really requiring thrust, so you're really focusing that energy into a small area over there, so the noise problem there is much more difficult to deal with. But in the slower speed turbines, air turbines, and things of those nature, it's not as difficult to deal with, especially with open blades. Mainly the lowest noise you're going to get is generally the open platform that almost looks like a propeller. The next second best thing is what Mike Honeywell is doing, where basically their blade, almost has like no enclosure. It's almost like a standing vertical fan, where basically, like I guess as Eric described, it looks like a bicycle rim, where basically with spokes running through, and they mount the blades along that edge, and then the outer ring is the only part of the enclosure, which is actually minimized as much as possible to try to keep the noise down. But even still, you know, here again, 2,500 watts is a tremendous amount of power for, you know, here again, a typical house probably needs to operate on around 10 kW. So it sounds like you probably need four to really put a real dent in your electric bill, Dick. K4SW, KC2QIQ.
Hey, Dick? Yeah, Glenn, you need 10 kilowatts when you're running the electric range. But 24 hours a day, you don't need that. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, two things. When we're talking about wind turbines, although this thing I'd be interested to see where they place their bearings and how they keep it, you know, fixed in position. It looks like there may be some kind of a structure that holds in the middle, but here we're talking about variable speeds. When we're talking about a jet engine, it usually has an operating range between, you know, X number of RPM and Y number of RPM. Here we're talking about devices that can go from very slow to whatever the maximum speed is very fast. And by the way, this particular device that we're looking at, they say at 59 miles an hour, it produces 4,700 watts, which is a lot of juice. But still, I can imagine that it, even though the blades, they probably put this thing in a, you know, wind tunnel many times to optimize it, but it's still got to make a heck of a lot of cutting noise. And, you know, how do you minimize that kind of thing? Whereas if, when you have something that's directed like the exhaust of a turbine, you have some sort of control over it. But this thing being an open frame, I kind of wonder about it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the ad right now on that website for the Honeywell WT6500 low resistance turbine, and it says that if you live in an area of class 4 wind, it'll produce 2,500 kilowatt hours per year. I was hoping it was saying averaging at 2,500 watts.
Dick, scroll down to the PDF. There's the one that says energy output curve.
Okay, I see the PDFs, and I'm looking for the one that says energy output curve. Oh, yes, found it. I'm opening that document right now.
And then when you open it up, scroll down to, there's a bunch of data there that says Honeywell Wind Turbine Model Stargate Windtronics, and it'll give you the actual output in a class 4 wind in watts at the various different speeds.
KC2OJO with
a comment. KC2OJO, give us a little bit more audio and your name and go right ahead with your comment.
This is Howard, KC2OJO, and I just wanted a comment that very often you don't need too many curves for a wind turbine. When the efficiency is about the same over the range, it's basically proportional to the cube of the wind speed, which is a real problem, because if it has a rated output and the wind speed goes down by 2, your power goes down by 8. And you can see that because the mass that passes the blade is proportional to wind speed, but the momentum or power behind it is mass times velocity squared, so you end up with a cube. Factor net.
I agree with your mathematics that it should be a cube law if the blade is always operating in a linear manner, Howard. Right now, if I look at this thing where they claim wind speed miles per hour, okay, percent of wind speed, class, annual hours, okay, power curve, alrighty. 4,700 watts at 24 miles an hour. If I go down to 12 miles an hour, I'm down 1,000 watts. There's a 4-to-1 ratio in power output with a 2-to-1 change in speed. So it appears to, at least at the upper end, be operating square law, not cube law. Let me go the next step. If I go from 10 down to 5 miles an hour, I go from a little bit less than a kilowatt to a little bit over 140 watts. Yes, at the low end, it looks like it is operating cube law. So I agree with you. At the upper end, it seems to be sliding into square law throughout much of the region. Down at the low end, it seems to be cube law. I think you got it, Howard. Back to you, Howard.
The reason it doesn't work at the high end is that at the high end of a wind turbine, in order not to tear the thing apart, blades are usually throttled someone. If they can change the, I guess it's the cane, not the cane, but the twist. If they can change that, they automatically throttle back. As a matter of fact, the higher the wind goes, the more they have to throttle back, or the turbine will just tear itself apart, at the very least from turning so fast that the edges of the blade are going so fast, the centrifugal force will basically fracture everything.
KC2, QAQ.
Yeah, they got one other thing in their favor here, and that is they can electronically overload it to force it to turn slower, even though you've got a higher wind speed. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, most of the generating systems where you're using wind turbines and other things, you can control these things with very, very small, like little pick controllers, and you can put an algorithm in there. And this thing is really starting to pick up some speed where you don't like it. Normally, you try to keep the load on or keep the load as continuous as possible into the inverter. But basically how you protect the blade is you change the direction. You know, that blade is gonna really take the stress when it's dead into the wind. But just put it, you know, 45 degrees to the wind, and guess what? She slows right down. Back to you, Dick.
Very crafty. And Wade, you do have this servo mechanism that's rotating it, and you got a weather vane that tells you which way the wind is blowing from. So on the day that's too windy, you can run the thing almost parallel to the wind instead of into the wind. And except for the weather vane, I guess you want a sensing weather vane, but not a real weather vane there. So maybe that's what they're doing. That's pretty crafty. So that's the poor man's equivalent of doing pitch control, a collective pitch. To adjust the collective pitch on all the blades is a lot of mechanism. It's rotary swash plates, if you know what I mean. So a much craftier idea is just to aim it away from the wind. I like that. Maybe if you have any further questions or comments on this, give me a call, letters. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Comment.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, might it be that the actual vanes are flexible and sort of flatten out at the higher wind velocities?
That's another protection mechanism, although I worry about that one, because if the blades are deflectable with the wind, that means they're eventually going to give you a fatigue failure.
Not in this device.
Go ahead, Eric. How do you think they're doing? Do you think the blades do flex, Eric?
No, they look fixed. And what I'm looking at now is that the actual Honeywell brochure, which I opened up, and it looks like they have a servo that moves the thing in the direction of the wind. They call it auto-directional. I suspect that when the wind gets a little too strong, they do exactly what you were talking about.
Yeah, the wind turbine power curve does look like it's at least square law on the right-hand side and quite possibly cube law in the middle. And aiming it parallel to the wind, I think, is one of the main protection mechanisms. Still looks like a pretty nice machine. Were you tempted to buy one of these, Eric?
No, not really, but it looks like something that I've been wanting to build. although it's given me a few new ideas. I mean, I've essentially been thinking of doing something like that in some of my experiments, but never at that level, because I've kind of concentrated on making the electric bicycle. And by the way, the MIT made a really beautiful electric bicycle motor, but I took a different approach, which is similar to what this turbine is, and it's an interesting concept, and I'm sure it's patented.
As I look at this diagram on that PDF that you had me open, I'm reasonably convinced that the bearing that supports that turbine is on the perimeter. It's not supported at the center of the hub. That makes that bearing sort of a great big lazy Susie bearing, a Susan bearing. And to seal that as it goes all the way around the perimeter, if it has to be lubricated, that's not so easy. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, I agree with you. And by the way, if you open up the Honeywell PDF, and they have one, look carefully at the coupling that it's mounted on. That looks like a servo motor to me, the way it is. And you can see the way the wires go. So I suspect that there's a wind vane somewhere that they're not showing you to detect the direction of the wind, and that's what they use for pointing.
That's quite a bit of hardware for the money. I think the price is not too bad. It's too bad that we're not getting enough incentives, and too bad we're not getting a reasonable return on investment number of years, and the fact that many zoning boards will raise your assessed valuation of your house because you've done this. My goodness, is that an anti-incentive. Oh, by the way, yeah, how are we going to turn that around so that this country turns more green? Over to you, Eric.
Yeah, down at the bottom of the Honeywell brochure, it says, the smart box control system includes optimal power transfer controller, true sine wave inverter, of course, battery power management system, wind direction and speed measurement control system, and an RS-485 control port. So that kind of spells it out for you.
Sure does. Looks like a fairly nice design. Looks like some good engineering has gone into this. And if we have any further questions or comments, give me your call letters right now.
This is K2KEY.
Okay. Mel, the salesman came to your house, and look what he did. Look what he created. You got it, Mel.
Yes, I will say it is a shame that we are in such a predicament in this country with energy and taking so much of our resources financially, not counting what our people are going through in different parts of this world, sacrificing their lives so that this oil will continuously flow. And I think that this is it's a travesty that so many of these different technologies are not being pursued, that they put put all kinds of nonsense in a way that you can't get approval. You can't put a wind generation off the coast of somebody with a binoculars. We'll say it ruins my view and things on and on like that. I think this is something wrong, and I think it's strictly, I bet there's a lot of money that's backing all this, keeping this off the market, because we'll pay for this oil at any price, I believe, Dick. Over.
Well said, Ned. Well.
Yeah, we're protecting that flow of oil from the Middle East by way of a lot of dollars and a lot of American blood. And that said, we have the resources, we have the technology, just pure solar power input and wind power input to this country is more than enough. Mother Nature is giving us that power day in and day out, free of charge, and we're not using it. 4 million watts of solar power hits my property essentially every high noon, my acre of property in Huntington. Boy, I'd love to be able to capture 1% of that, 40 kilowatts. Even if I only get it at high noon, 40 kilowatts is an awful nice number. And 1% doesn't sound impossible. We have the ability to build solar voltaics and wind generators and so on. I wish more of our long-range resources, our long-range investments, was going into that. We've got a fair number of people out of work. They could be at work right now producing that hardware. And once that hardware is produced and properly dispersed and collecting that energy and cutting back our oil flow, the fact that we're spilling dollars and blood to get that oil, and we're giving those dollars to people who don't like us, which gives them the ability to do things that we don't like. Something's wrong with that picture. K2RIW listening.
KB0YQ operating to
The KB0 station. Tell us where you're located and your name, and go right ahead with your comment. My name is Dick.
Greetings, this is KB0, Yankee Tango Uniform operating Region 2 on a portable. Out in the Midwest, I'm from Minnesota. Out in the Midwest, I fill my car up when I can with ethanol. It's a flexible fuel vehicle, and I'd rather support Minnesota and North and South Dakota corn farmers than, shall we say, someone who wants to do me harm. So it's cheaper than gas, but you don't get the mileage. But then again, I'm supporting, you know, local farmers. Now if they come up with cane sugar like the Brazilians or switchgrass, then we can leave the corn behind. That's just my 2 cents. Back to the net.
Question?
Go ahead, John.
Dick, I only see one thing wrong with the whole situation. The more people that go solar voltaic, a wonderful idea, and I support it, the infrastructure is going to still cost the utilities the same amount. You're going to have to supply 50% of the people on your block, so it's not going to change the responsibility, so the prices are going to